Welcome to Does the Team Think? With Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And now, team, listen to the first question that comes to you from Mr. John Harvey. Hello, Mr. Harvey. What's your question?
Before one gets a driving license, one has to pass a driving test. Does the team think that before getting a marriage license, there should be a marriage test? If so, what form should such a test take?
Before one gets a driving license, one has to pass a driving test. Does the team think that before getting a marriage license, there should be a marriage test? If so, what form should such a test take?
I suppose one has to decide, like, whether your clutch doesn't slip or your plug doesn't spark or your wife doesn't bind. Is that the sort of thing you have in mind?
No, no, this question is nothing you can take lying down, really. Thank you very much for your smile. We can't send smiles across the radio, but Mr. Harvey's just given me the most lovely smile. Thank you, Mr. Harvey. I'll treasure that.
You'll want it back later. No, you see, both sides of the happy couple, the male and the female, should have separate tests because, I mean, they have to.
Well,
they
can't go in the room together. It would be rude.
They're required in the marriage to do different things, like you'd have an egg boiling test for the lady.
3 minutes hard.
Mr. Hart.
The girl should have a test for cooking. That's, you know what I mean?
I do agree with that.
They should be, because if you marry a bad cook, then that is the start of the disintegration of a marriage.
It is.
I once courted a girl, in Sefton Park in Liverpool, and she cooked us a cake, and she baked a cake, and we went out on a picnic, and I couldn't eat the damn thing. Anyway, we went for a walk, and there was a lake there with some ducks in, and I threw the cake to the ducks, and they all sank.
So later on, you gave her a bun to put in the oven, did you?
Mr. Harvey's turn has come up.
Mr. Harvey's turn.
What sort of test would you envisage?
I think the biggest problem that my wife has is listening to me snore. So I think that the prospective wife should listen to a recording of her husband snoring in bed, see if she could sleep through it.
When one snores, the only possible thing to do is to put a plug up one's nose holes. And then, of course, you snore and you shoot your toes off one by one.
I've never heard anything so ridiculous.
Well, I don't snore, but they say a very good cure is to put some marbles in the back of your pyjamas.
One of the important features of a test for driving is to know your road signs, isn't it? And I think one should know one's marriage signs. One should be able to know when a woman is, you know, going to turn left.
In the mood, you mean?
Or when she's going to make a U-turn. I mean, you could put a sign up in the bedroom, if you like, no entry between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m.
Well, I think one of the big things about a marriage is religion. Now, there was a Protestant boy, and he was engaged to a very, very innocent little Catholic girl, you see. And one day they went for a picnic in the woods, and there was a lake there. It was a very hot day, so they decided they'd have a bathe. But neither of them had any bathing gear with them. So the little Protestant boy said to the sweet little Catholic girl, "Now, you go behind that tree and strip off and get into the lake, and I'll go behind this tree, I'll strip off and run into the lake, and we won't collide, you see." But however they did, they timed it badly, and there was a confrontation. And the little Catholic girl looked at the Protestant, she said, "Well, I knew there was a difference between Catholics and Protestants, but I didn't know it was all that different."
Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. John Harvey. Thank you. All right, well, now, team, here comes a question from Mrs. Agnes Kennedy.
How do members of the team stop a telephone conversation when the person at the other end seems to be going on forever?
How do members of the team stop a telephone conversation when the person at the other end seems to be going on forever?
Well, I gurgle and thud.
It's a very strange thing that this lady, Mrs. Kennett, has brought up this subject, because I am in a bit of trouble at the moment.
Haven't paid your telephone.
Doesn't show.
No, I'm in a bit of trouble at the moment. It's a terrible thing when you get this terrible language on the phone from an unknown person. And every day I get this insulting language from this fella, and he must be crazy, because we're not on the phone.
I think it very much depends on who's paying for the call. I mean, if they're paying for it, you can just leave the phone there and go and have a bath or something. Come back and say, thank you very much, goodbye.
But
it's your pay.
You can't wait till one day every month for that.
One of the things you can do is to make those noises that happen when you... when you're in a call box.
That's right, yes, that's a good idea.
And they think, oh, and say, frankly, sorry, I haven't got another P. Well, another 2P no, it is, actually.
But they're ringing you.
Well, supposing I'm ringing them.
I would like to hear from Cyril an example of, what did you say, gurgle and thud?
Well, you see, you have this person on the on the phone, and they're saying things that you don't want them to say, possibly, or they just go on saying the one thing, may we book you so-and-so. And you get rather bored with this. So after a time, you go...
I thought it
My
would be
God,
good.
You must have a phone repairer at your house every week.
And they think that's the end of Fletcher.
Team, let's...
Which brings me to
yeah,
a little
I thought
joke.
It might, yes.
Because at a seance, a very miserly old lady who had passed over got through to speak to her niece... And her niece shouted out, don't take the message, she'll reverse the charges.
Now, I think we'd like to hear from Mrs. Kennett. Mrs. Kennett, what is your system of cutting off a conversation on the phone?
Well, I usually say I've got something in the oven.
Not a bum.
Not a bum.
I was just going to say, doesn't show. Push it in now. But surely if somebody's going to talk a long time on the phone, for instance, when Edward Taylor, the producer of this show, rings me up and says, Arthur, will you please do Does the Team Think Again? And I say, oh, I don't want to do that rotten thing again. Well, you know, he goes on and on. He says, if you don't do it, Ted will have one of his nasty turns. Yeah. And you know, the nasty turns of today are the TV stars of tomorrow.
But the lady said, you said you'd left something in the oven.
Something in the oven, yeah.
Well, nobody would be likely to believe that of me, so I'd have to say something like I've left a bottle uncorked or something. Something like that.
But, I mean, you could say I'm just giving my horse a rub down.
Another very good thing is to say, just there's somebody at the door. They always believe that. Oh, what?
Mind you, I tell you...
There was a great cry of yes from the audience.
They all use the same excuse.
One of the strangest things ever happened to me, and it was one of those unfinished conversations that drive you mad. I got a crossed line, you see, and this woman said, yes, he has, hasn't he? Yes. Well, how's Arthur then? And she said, well, you know, just the same. He had a very nasty accident the other day. She said, mind you, his false teeth were in his back pocket at the time. And she hung up. And for this day, I've been walking around on my knees looking for a man who's got false teeth in his back pocket.
Yeah. He's got teeth marks on his bum, I expect.
Sometimes I pretend that I'm one of those sexy types and do a bit of heavy breathing. That puts them off.
Oh, but I get that the other way. I get women ring me up. I can tell it's a female, you know, and they don't answer. It's just this heavy breathing because all my girlfriends have got asthma.
There's one absolutely final way of terminating a conversation.
That's the word, final.
Use a pair of scissors.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And the girl on the other end says, well, this is a surprise. He's working well tonight. Don't applaud the thing I'm working you with my foot.
Thank you, team. Very much indeed. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mrs. Kennett. Hello. Hello, Mr. Steve Page. Mr. Steve Page takes a seat on my right-hand side, and he puts this question to you, team. Listen carefully. Here it is.
If each member of the team ran a farm... and had his three colleagues working for him, what jobs would he allocate to each?
Now, just as a reminder to Jim, let's keep this friendly. If each member of the team ran a farm and had his three colleagues working for him, what jobs would he allocate to each?
I've tried to give them jobs down on my farm all these years, but they won't do anything.
But what do you want us to do, Jim?
They won't do a hand's turn. Well, there is a job for Mr. Ray. There is a job on the farm called tedding.
Tedding?
Yeah, tedding.
How do you ted?
Well, it's something to do with hay. This chap, Mr.
He doesn't even know what it is, and he wants you to do it.
Mr.
Page. I've been a member of the National Farmers Union for 30 years, and I'll tell you what tedding is.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. You've cut the hay and it's lying there a bit wet.
All dead.
It's a bit damp. And you've suddenly got a nice, bright, fine morning, so you go through with a thing called a tedder, and it sort of lifts it up and gets the
air
into it.
That's what I just told
them. And you're then able to... Didn't you say that?
You ted it,
He said that. Tedded it.
You turn it into a row.
Let's get away from the wheat for a moment and the corn.
Oh, yeah. You're actually talking about hay, Ray.
I'd look after the cows because I've got a lot of pork.
Actually, I've got Arthur looking after the cows because he's the biggest milker in the business.
An extra ten. Well, actually, I'm looking after the cows in my lot because I'm a gentleman farmer and I milk the cows with my gloves on.
I've got a good titter. Now, I think Jimmy of the panel is the only one who's got a touch of the farmers. And he says that the hardest job of all in farming is breeding cows, and I think that's a lot of bull. Heard about the farmer who married, he was an old fellow, he married a young wife, and Palavis met him a few days later and said, well, how's the wife? He said, do you know, I can't keep my hands off her. So a couple of weeks went by and they met again, and he said, well, how's the wife now? He said, I just can't keep my hands off her. So they met again another couple of weeks, he said, well, how's things now? He said, oh, okay. I've sacked my hands and bought a combine harvester.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mr. Page.
And the next one is you.
All right, team, pray silence for our special guest. Our special guest today is a man who's used to coping with comics, as he's one of the very best character actors in the business, and I really mean that. Making a return visit to Does the Team Think, let's have a warm welcome for Kenneth Connor.
Kenneth Connor.
Here he is.
Yes, he's on the morning.
You're looking very dapper and smart, Kenneth. And sunburned. Yes, no, don't do that.
I give him all my old suits.
Yes, put me
Thank
down,
you very much.
All right, Kenneth, what is your question for this erudite team of ours?
Why have you changed your shade of lipstick?
Why have you changed your shade of... Oh, sorry.
Talking to you, then.
Oh, that's to me.
Yes, the team.
Team.
Does the team... I mean this very sincerely.
Oh?
No. Does the team think that women traffic wardens these days are looking prettier?
Does the team think that women traffic wardens these days are looking prettier?
Well, prettier than what? I think they're definitely prettier than the meters. But it's only marginal.
Mind you, the meters seem to have a better figure.
The only thing is, with women, there's nowhere to stick the coin.
I always get in first and I say, how sweet of you to ask for my autograph. Well, I think these parking meter maids, meter maids they call them. I think they're very much maligned, you know, because it's not every female that'll give you 2 hours for 40p. It's not every warden that can do 40p in 2 hours.
I think it's not so much the the traffic warden lady, it's the way she's dressed which is so unattractive.
Yeah.
I do think if they'd redesigned the costumes and we had these bunny girl
sort of traffic wardens,
you see, they would have a red triangular fluffy tail, and if you were lucky, you know, right on the top there, they might have something tattooed.
What do you
like,
mean there?
They might have something tattooed there, like, do not park here.
Where would you put the bollards?
What a great party they were, the bollards. I wouldn't leave them in the centre of the road.
But you know, you're absolutely Cyril, for once, you were talking a bit of sense there. They do have a rather frumpish sort of
gear.
But of course the point of it is that they've got so much to carry with them. They've got all those awful forms and plastic bags.
Well, they haven't got to do that. They've got those awful forms anyway.
No.
I saw one this morning. She looked like an unmade bed, you know. It's the uniform, really. And all that yellow. And I'm told that they've got yellow knickers. In which to put their stickers.
Really?
I often wonder what an unmade bed looks like, because I always get out of mine very carefully.
Team, our guest has been extremely patient. Let's hear his views on the traffic warden situation. Kenneth, Connor?
Well, it's a very serious question, I think, because I really honestly do feel that they are looking exceptionally pretty these days. I live in Harrow.
It's not... because you're getting older, that's why.
You see. Policemen look younger, you know.
That's what I mean.
That's because you're getting younger, too.
Well, the policemen aren't looking prettier. That's the trouble.
Let's hear from more from Kenneth.
Mr. Connor.
I live in Harrow. Not Harrow on the Hill. It's more Harrow in the Hollow. But I've noticed that they are breathtakingly beautiful.
Breathtaking? You mean they're giving you the test all the time?
No. Well, yes, but not breath-wise. I'm working in Victoria at the moment. Not on the station, of course.
How painful for Victoria.
Yeah. And they're extremely beautiful in
These
Victoria.
These are two places where you park your car. Harrow and Victoria.
Yes.
So you're hoping that some of the meter maids will be listening to this programme.
Yes, of course.
You're just trying to put yourself right.
And it would be someone like you who would spoil the whole
Quick thinker.
Yes. You're a what?
What?
A quick
drinker. Drinker.
Yes. Now, my son, Jeremy.
Sinker.
My son, Jeremy is.
What do you call him for short? Jerry?
Jerry, yes. Yeah. We couldn't get any other handle to his name, you see, but the fact remains. He's become an actor. He's been working very, very hard, and he was down at the Labour Exchange recently. And he collected the princely sum of £3.
Yeah.
And when he came out, having used my car, being an actor of that sort, He'd been done for two. So in the welfare state, he got a pound that week, and his mother and I are starving.
I think the sympathy trick is the best way of getting out of it, absolutely the best way.
What's that?
Well, when they come along to you and you're 10 minutes over time, and they look at you and they say, you're 10 minutes over time, sir, and you say, well, as a matter of fact, I'm very worried. My wife is going to have a baby. And they say, oh, I'm sorry. And when is she going to have the baby? And you say, we're starting tonight.
Would you prefer some other system of collecting fines?
There is a new idea come from America recently.
What's that, Ted?
Well, I'll tell you what happens. You pull up your car, you press a button, the car collapses, you put it in the glove box and walk away with the car under your arm. Very simple, very easy. And does away with traffic wardens.
Have you been in one recently? There's some car parks at some of the stations outside London now where you have to put some coins in a thing.
There's one at Bournemouth, Jim.
Yes, and then an arm comes up and lets you in. I don't know whose arm it is, but but the awful thing about it is if you haven't got the coin and there's people behind you, you're in a bit of a jam. And also you have to have a very long arm to stick the coin in the hole, I find.
But you've got to be very, very careful with those machines.
New machines
every week on those stations. And there was one there, I saw a chap lurking by this machine. And it said, the bachelor's housewife. He went up, put 5 pence in, and a hand came out and sewed a button on his flies.
Thank you very much, Kenneth Connor. Thank you very much, Kenneth. Get off, rubbish! And as Kenneth Connor makes his exit, Mrs. Dorothy Andrews has entered. She has sat down, and this is her question. Listen.
If each member of the team had a flower named after him, what does he think it should be?
If each member of the team had a flower named after him, what does he think it should be?
I think we should have one flower to cover the whole team and call it cornflower.
Well, being a little fella, I could do with a self-raising flower.
When I say cornflower, you think of some of the jokes that have gone by. Arthur, how do you stop a cock crowing on Sunday morning, kill it on Saturday night? Really, Arthur? That was so funny, I used it.
Oh, you've got to ruin my career.
It's made mine.
I am a very keen gardener, and I get that from my grandfather. He was a keen gardener. He had green fingers. His neck was a funny colour, too. But it was my grandfather who taught me how to grow my giant hollyhocks. And if you want to grow hollyhocks, I can give you the recipe. You know what it is?
Yes.
Stout. But you mustn't pour the stout on right away. It's too concentrated, you see. It's got to be diluted a bit, so I tell you what I do. Every evening, I drink about 2 pints of stout. Then just before I go to bed, I go down to the bottom of the garden, to the hollyhocks, and I breathe on them.
Now, what's your name? And they get you by the hollyhocks.
No, that's it.
Cyril Fletcher.
I should be a red rose, because, yes, love is like a red, red rose, and I've loved myself for years.
How about Rose? Do you love her as well?
Oh, yes. Jimmy Why Edwards.
I'm thinking,
Rose?
Jimmy. I'm thinking more of groups of flowers. I mean, I think Cyril would be a climber.
And I'd be a crawler.
And no, I thought he was my
friend. Arthur, I'm going to pay you a compliment. You'd be a perennial.
Ah, thank you.
Because you go on forever.
That's very good. Very good. Right.
Have any of you ever had a flower named after you?
Yes, I have a pansy.
Really?
I used to sing a song. It said, it went, oh, would I were a pansy, in your garden I would bloom. Maybe you'd come and pluck me, dear, to wear in your bosom.
You'll never get away with it today, Arthur.
I knew a fellow that walked into a shop and he said that we send flowers everywhere. And he said, is this right that you send flowers everywhere? And the lady said, yes. He said, well, I'm a pansy. He said, send me home.
I know a fellow went into a shop and said, have you got any dogs here going cheap? And he said, no, I've got a couple that go woof, woof.
You're still on the old dog roll, aren't you?
No, but you see, flowers, it'd be nice to be perpetuated in some way.
Well, you can be in Denmark.
I would love to think that somebody picked up some rare flower in 200 years' time and stuffed it up his nose and said, oh, just a whiff of Jimmy Edwards. No, no.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mrs. Andrews.
Andrews.
Andrews. Good. Team, this question is put to you by Mr. Colin Giblin.
Do the team remember the first professional engagement they had, what they were paid for it, and what act they did?
They're still doing it, but we'll find out what they're paid.
They're just doing four guests.
That's what we've all got to say that. Get a new chairman.
All right. Here's the team. Here's the question.
Do the team.
Do the team remember their first professional engagements and what they earned, and what act did they do?
I have a nasty feeling that our friend, the questioner, Mr. Gilpin, is...
Giblin.
Well, it's very near Giblin.
Mr. Giblets.
Just can't have a man.
It's an inside job.
The G is hard.
I have a nasty feeling that he knows the answer to this. He was probably there. My first... I actually do. The answer to your question, sir, is in the affirmative. Definitely, categorically, yes. I remember clearly the first time I ever got paid to perform. I'm not going to say to be funny, because you only jump on me. But
by was a six-star
was
woman.
At the Windmill Theatre.
That's right.
Where, we never closed.
That's right. Where we used to
only when Jimmy
where
was
we used
on.
To, where we used to where? Where we used to scratch a bare living.
Yeah. I always thought it wasn't.
He keeps abreast of the time, doesn't he?
I thought it was we never closed. I thought it was we never clothed.
No, can we get back to your first professional engagement?
Well,
we've
my
had
first
Jimmy's
professional
Arthur,
engagement.
Arthur.
Well. As a choir boy, I suppose. That was the first time I got paid.
You got paid?
Then they found out what was wrong with the choir.
No, they did that when my voice broke. My mother took me to the doctor and said, I think he's got a sore throat. And the doctor took my mother on one side and said, he's becoming a man. But he was a liar. I never did. But anyway. No, but when I was a choir boy first, I used to get threepence a month. And that was my first professional engagement.
Overpaid
at the start. And then we used to get a little on the side as well because they used to put on the notice board a marriage or a funeral, a wedding or a funeral. Well, a wedding, we got two bob for. A funeral, we get half a dollar, 2 and 6. So we used to go up to the board and say, oh, good, it's a funeral.
I suppose you were hoping that the act died. But I tell you something,
Ted.
Truly, the very first time I ever got any money for performing was when I was in a little 7-piece band playing first violin, and there were a lot of trombones.
First violin in a 7-piece band? How many other violins were there in a 7-piece band?
It was only me, but I was so proud. I had on my cards, with gilt edges the cards had, on tour, Ned Lowe, with a 7-piece band, leader, first violin. And every night they used to drink so much beer, and I was a teetotaler then, I was only a young boy, and I was sent back with the empties, and there was a penny on every bottle, and they drank 72 bottles a night between them. And I got 6 bob a night, and that was the first professional money I ever received.
Arthur, quite seriously, apart from being a choir boy, when you first went on the stage, if you like...
I got £6.10 a week.
Yes, where?
I got... Well, I opened at the Electric Theatre, Colchester.
Yes.
Which, like every other theatre, I've closed them all over the country.
You mean there was a power cut?
£6.10 a week I got, and I could live in digs, as Ted would vouch.
Yes.
Not
yeah.
These two youngsters.
Yes.
Here. But we 30 bob a week, eh, Ted?
Yes.
One woman, she wouldn't take any money from me. She said she'd enjoyed having me.
Cyril Fletcher, what was your first
professional
engagement?
My first professional engagement was to perform to the ladies' night of the Hampstead Lacrosse Club, and I got 25 bob.
That's very good.
Was that net?
Well, in the 30s, I used to do a lot of Masonics, and the average fee for a Masonic was 2 guineas. It was always 2 guineas. You always got 2 guineas, and usually the lodge organist charged you 10%, so he got 1.79. And I was doing a Masonic one night, and a man came out to me, as they usually did, and said, "Are you fixed for next Thursday?" I looked at me, "Daddy," I said, "I'm free." He said, "Will three be all right?" And he put 3 fingers up. I said, "Oh, yes, Harding and Hobbs, Clapham Junction it was." So I went along, and you couldn't do any other job just being out of Clapham Junction. Anyway, I did my turn. I went so well, I did another turn. I did them 2 turns. And this fella came out to pay me. He said, "You were marvellous, Arthur," and gave me 7 and 6. And I said, "What the hell's this?" He said, "That's right, three half-crowns."
Thank you very much, team. And there, I'm afraid, we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners and, of course, our special guest, Kenneth Connor. This is MacDonald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.